You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is on a Monday night. It is Carlin at 800-919-3776. History is about to be made, people. 800-919-3776 on Twitter at Chris Carlin. By all means, meet us over there. We are also on the live stream as well at ESPN 98.7 FM's Twitter handle and, of course, on ESPN New York's Facebook page. We cannot believe that we are in this position, but here we are. The New York Giants are going to win the NFC East and are going to host a home playoff game with six wins this coming season. This NFL season, I should say. This is history that is about to happen. Why? Because the Giants are playing the best football of anybody else in the NFC East. And that is the equivalent of me telling you that I am the most healthy and in shape individual in this room currently right now. Both statements are true. It doesn't necessarily mean that they would be true in any other possible circumstance. I can't get over the fact that this is the case, but I do have to give credit where credit is due. The Giants are playing good football the last two games. Now, granted, they have played two bad football teams, but they have also lost to other teams this year where, you know, they have been close in so many occasions that you felt like at least there was some progress being made, but they weren't quite able to get over the hump in some of these occasions. The last two games, they have done just that. How have they done it? They have done it because they haven't turned over the football, and the quarterback has been the reason that they haven't turned over the football. That is a phrase that we have never once used before when it comes to Daniel Jones. And it's not hard to see what's going on here. He has a better understanding of ball protection in every circumstance, not just throwing balls away, but more importantly with fumbles, when he's going to get hit, protecting the ball. That has been much, much better over the last couple of games. Is that going to continue? You hope so. Is the trend of continuing to throw the football away at the right times going to continue? You hope so. The key for everything in life is simply consistency. And for Daniel Jones, through his first year and a half in the NFL, that has been a key that he has continued to look for, but is yet to be able to unlock the door. Well, I'm not going to go overboard here and say that he has figured it out, and the questions are all answered when it's been two bad teams, but they are two bad NFL teams. That has to be taken into account. And it also has to be taken into account that this is somebody that looks like they are genuinely developing, that is being put in circumstances to succeed by his offensive coordinator. There's clearly a relationship that has developed with Jason Garrett that he understands now what Garrett's trying to get done, and he understands the playbook. And the number one development to me beyond the turnovers is simply this. He has full command of what's going on the field. It's the old Phil Simms saying, the game is slowing down. For Daniel Jones, the game is finally slowing down. Let me ask you a question. Think about yesterday's game. Was there a moment in that game, be it at the line of scrimmage, be it during a play, be it wherever, where he felt like he was overwhelmed? And how many times have you been able to say that before? Not often. In fact, I can count on maybe one or two fingers how many times before in his career we've been able to say that. Line of scrimmage, recognizes what coverages are, recognizes where blitzes are coming from, puts everybody where they need to be successful. Dropping back into the pocket. It's not immediately trying to roll out and get himself away from the rush. No, it's standing in there and delivering the football more often than not. And when it's not there, when he takes a sack, he's got the ball protected. It's delivering the ball on time in some circumstances where there have been plenty of times before where the ball is simply there late, and that results in a turnover. That's not the case right now. He's not taking forever to deliver the football where it needs to be. There are so many good things that have happened over the last two games. 71% completion percentage, 456 yards, not off the charts, hasn't thrown a touchdown pass, but hasn't thrown an interception, hasn't fumbled the ball, and most importantly, and somebody said this back when Saquon Barkley got hurt. Yes, it was me. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I was the first one to tell you that they should run RPOs for Daniel Jones. And guess what? Since Saquon Barkley got hurt, Daniel Jones is averaging 8.1 yards per carry. Would I like to see him take less hits? I would. I think that will come in time. But the single biggest reason that the Giants are going to win the NFC East with six wins is going to be the quarterback is going to continue to play consistent football. I believe that to be the case because the signs are there. All you have to do is pay attention. And frankly, I thought yesterday, even though the Eagles stink, even though the Redskins last week stink, I thought yesterday this was a young man who gets it. This is a guy that finally the light switch has gone on in the room for. And what did we say 2 weeks ago? The second half of the year, because these quarterbacks don't get nearly as much time as they used to develop, has to be about Jones. We're off to a good start there. We're off to a good start. Hopefully that will continue. Will there be bumps? There will be. But I think you're going to see the consistent Jones more than you're going to see the inconsistent Jones. And frankly, I can confidently say, the Giants will win the division if they get to six. Because look at these other teams. Look at how bad the Redskins are. Look at how bad the Cowboys are. The Eagles are awful. The Giants may be just playing the best out of all of them. Listen to the Eagles' schedule the rest of the way. They go to Cleveland. They host the Seahawks. They go to Green Bay. They host the Saints. They go to Arizona before they wrap up with Washington and with the Cowboys in Washington, and the Cowboys game is in Dallas. There's no shot the Eagles are getting to six wins this year. There's no chance in hell they're getting to six wins this year. Meanwhile, can you say that about the Giants? You absolutely can say that. Because of who they have left. They have the Bengals left. Yes, they have to go to Seattle as well. Arizona comes here. Cleveland comes here. They do go to Baltimore. Baltimore looks a little bit out of it. Can we agree on that? Even though they are better than the Giants. And the Dallas Cowboys are week 17 right here. Can the Giants win three of those six games? Not can they. The Giants will win three of those six games. They will win the NFC East. And they will be the first team in the history of the National Football League to host a playoff game after going 6-10. 800-919-3776. That's right. Let's start on the phones, and we will start on the phones with Rodney, who is in the car. Rodney, what do you got?
What's up, Carlton? How's it going, man?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Coming up this win, feeling very excited, very happy. You know, it's still 3-17, but you know what? We're better than the Cowboys and the Redskins, and the Eagles playing out suck. Another question I have is about, remember I called you last week to talk about Daniel Jones and why we're so quick to judge him. Why is it that we're not more, give these quarterbacks more time now? I feel like, you know, Daniel Jones, even Darnold, and even Baker from the Browns, like, why is the question about these quarterbacks? I mean, more with them than Jones, I'm assuming.
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. Teams want to win before they're paying these quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks are the ones that ultimately determine the futures of head coaches, the futures of general managers, so they need to see them develop a lot quicker than they used to. That's just the way it is now, and when you look around the league and you see Tua playing as well as he is, and you see right. Justin Herbert playing as well as he is, and Burrow playing as well as he is, I mean, look, you know, they still have their bumps in the road, there's no doubt, but you can see it right away. And look, it's not the case right. for everybody. We understand that, but you have to see it sooner rather than later now. It's just the way it's changed in the league.
Right. I don't know. Like, I feel like even like with like Lamar Jackson, like, are we now going to say that he's regressing, or is it that his team is hurt? Like, what is it? Like, how do you probably judge these quarterbacks?
Well, I think with Lamar, I can't say that Lamar, having won an MVP, is now regressing. Okay, I'm not going to do that. He's not having a good year throwing the football. And I think the biggest right. reason is the teams have really adjusted to what he's right. been doing. And they have made him work harder, so now it's on him to turn around and make the adjustment to how they're handling him defensively.
Correct. Right? That's true. That's a good point.
All right.
What do you think about... thank you. Bye.
All right. Well, I mean, I didn't... That was awkward. Awkward! John Carphone, next, 98.7 ESPN. Johnny.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm great, brother. What do you got?
I completely agree with you. I think that they're going to win the division. The Giants are going to win the division with 6 wins.
I mean, how are they? I mean, the bigger question right now, John, is how are they not going to win the division with 6
yeah.
wins?
Yeah, I agree.
After yesterday, how are they not?
Exactly. But what I'd really like to see, though, and of course, you know, that's going to be a lot of fun because we get more games, we get to, you know, cheer and root more. But what I'd really like to see is them to win one more a game that they're not supposed to win, you know, and really show something. And if they could come and do that and win.
What game is that?
I don't know.
Is that going to Seattle and winning?
Maybe. You know, who knows? You know,
I mean, let's look at the rest of the schedule real quick and pick 3 games that they're not supposed to win. All right. Are there 3 games they're not supposed to win? They go to Cincinnati. I can't say they should win the game. I could say they have a good chance to win that game.
Yeah, let's call that a win.
Okay. They go to Seattle. That would be a loss.
Not supposed to win, so I'd like to see them. That's one.
Arizona at home. Arizona's better than they are.
They should win. You know, that's another one.
Yep. One Cleveland. Should beat Cleveland at home.
I think they should, yes.
At Baltimore, should not win that game.
Should not. So Arizona,
Cowboys at home should win that game.
Right. So you got Arizona, Baltimore,
Seattle,
and Arizona.
Yeah.
One of those.
I don't think that's too much to ask to win one of those games, but what do we know about the Giants? That they rarely, if ever, find their way to winning every single game that they're supposed to win.
Right, but would you admit that every week we're getting a little better? And look at those guys running around the field, man. They're happy doing what they're doing. This coach has got them bought in. And when you're bought in and you're passionate about what you're doing, hey, any given Sunday.
Appreciate the phone call. I'm glad you brought up the coach. Because Joe Judge is connecting with this team. But the real question is how? Why is he having the success? Why do we feel like we do about Joe Judge's ability here to be the coach? Well, I think it's a couple of things. And I've talked to people, football coaches, people around the league, people who know him from up in New England. And I think it's a couple of things in particular. One thing that we have talked about before is that Joe Judge is much more of a people person than other Belichick assistants have been. And he has made sure that that has shown up in what he's doing, if that makes sense. He hasn't gotten away from himself at all and his personality and how he relates to players. There have been plenty of people that have gotten away from themselves. Look at what Eric Mangini did. I mean, we can give you a lot of those guys from the Belichick tree who absolutely got away from who they were. Joe has not done that. And you have seen players respond to him because of that. It's, I'm going to support my guys. What Logan Ryan said a couple of weeks ago, Joe said, get out of here if you need to go and be with your wife. Don't worry about us. After she was sick. Go down to Florida. Do what you have to do. And then at the same time, Golden Tate pulls what he pulls. He sits him down for a week. He doesn't screw around. It's not, you know, working with the scout team for just one practice or something like that. It's, no, you're not playing next week. Because this is not about you. All of that stuff, that carries currency in a locker room. Especially when you have other good players in that locker room. They see how they're going to be treated, and they see the guys who aren't as good can see that they're going to be good players are going to be treated a little bit similarly to what they're doing. That's important. And number two, it is not an easy thing to get guys who made the NFL because they were stars at their positions to be motivated to play special teams. So when you're a special teams coach in the league and you see that you have your group coming together, and they may not be thrilled about being on special teams. You know, they a receiver might think he's supposed to be starting. You know, guys who were, you know, the left guard on special teams, maybe a backup offensive lineman. He may not be terribly happy about being out there on special teams. You have to motivate those guys. Those guys who are not there because, first and foremost, that's what they want to do with their NFL careers and NFL lives. No. No, see, what you have to do if you're that guy is find a way to relate to them. Find a way to connect with them. Find a way to get on the same page with them. He has incorporated not only his own personality, but also he has incorporated that motivational ability, not to motivate players as a whole, but to motivate guys to do the things that they're not excited to do. I think that all has connected with his players. It's pretty simple who he reminds me of. He very much reminds me of John Harbaugh. Joe Judge is absolutely John Harbaugh. And if that's the case, you've got a winner. John in North Bergen is next, 98.7 ESPN. John, what's going on?
How you doing, Chris?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you for taking my phone call, my friend.
Yes, sir.
All right, two quick points real quick. As a diehard Giants fanatic since I've been 9 years old, you know, the Joe Judge, how you've been talking lately, and the last caller said the same thing. You know, everyone questioned Joe Judge when they picked him, but he's proving to be the right choice, and I'm happy with it because the way the team is playing, and like you said, they are playing hard for him. So they like him, and so I think that was a great pick now. And my second pick, my second point.
It's going to say a lot about him down the stretch of this season if they win the division. It's going to say an awful lot about him.
Right, but, I mean, the way they're playing, you could see it on the field. Like you said, they're running all over the field. Jabril Peppers is all over.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Chris, and my second point was, what do you think about the defense? Because the defense is playing lights out, too.
Defense is playing pretty well. You know, they were having their troubles stopping the run for a while yesterday against Miles Sanders. But defense is playing pretty well. And look, the one guy that we all, really two guys, we have to give Dave Gettleman credit for, as much as nobody really wants to.
I know.
Is Blake Martinez and bringing over James Bradbury. Bradbury's been phenomenal.
Yes.
He's been absolutely great.
Logan Ryan as well.
He's been very good.
Yes, yes. I agree with you all the time, Chris. I do. And
again, even Leonard Williams has played okay, but every once in a while he gets a dumb penalty and, you know.
You know,
I know he's got the
Julian
five sacks,
Love,
but still.
Julian Love, he's coming up too, you know. He could play. They could, yo, that's what I'm saying, Chris. The defense all around is improving week by week.
John, I can't argue with you, and I appreciate the call. It's getting better. I don't think it's going to be a defense that's going to stop offenses dead in their tracks. I think Carson Wentz played a big role in that yesterday. By the way, see what I'm talking about? You want to be stuck in that quarterback hell if you're the Jets? You see my point. I don't think they're going to be a defense that's going to stop everybody in their way. But I do think they're going to be more than serviceable. And they're winning the division. That's just it. That's it. Ah, let's do it. Steve in Staten Island is next. Steve, what's going on, brother? How are you tonight?
How you doing, Connor? How's everything? I had the pleasure of meeting you in the parking lot at the Giants game once. It was a pleasure.
I appreciate that. Was that when I was doing pre- and post-game, maybe?
Yeah, a few years back, yes.
Yeah, I got you.
I called you over the summer. I know times were different, and things are starting to look a little. But about the Giants, and I spoke to you once before, and you didn't agree. But again, I'm going to say it. It's time for people to stop listening to all the stupidity and recognize that David Gettleman is doing a good job here. He's building a team for a long-term run. The Giants are going to have good years coming their way, and we're starting to see the hints of it. It's coming. And I like David Gettleman. I like what he does. He cleared cap space over the years. He got rid of the people he had to get rid of. He's drafted very well. And look at his free agents. They're playing amazing.
His free agent signings this year have been very good. Jones is obviously playing better, and that's ultimately going to determine it for him, too. You have the problem. His biggest issues are a couple. Number one is Saquon. Saquon has not been able to stay on the field. Number two, it has taken a while to get back to where they needed to get back to. But I 100% agree that this season, I'm saying this at 3-7, you are seeing enough good signs about Gettleman's year where there is the possibility that he actually keeps his job.
Yeah, and this is a very young team, very young defense, a very young O-line unit, okay? And the thing is that going forward, yeah, if they win the division or they don't, they weren't supposed to. But the experience they get out of playing meaningful games through December, in the long term, next year and on, the Giants are going to be, I feel, the best team in the NFC East for years to come. That's it.
I don't know about years to come, and thanks for the call. I would say that the Giants are, for the first time in a while, having people get excited. And it's simply out of the last 2 weeks. And the reason they're getting excited is because they're starting to see that Daniel Jones may not suck. He may be capable of not turning the football over. And if that's the case, they have a good chance. I don't know that Jones is ever going to be a superstar quarterback. But if he can avoid turning the ball over, Jones could actually be better at that. Well, I can't say that yet. I was about to say he could actually be better at that than Eli down the line, but I'm not going to go there yet. Not even close to yet. It's a couple of games. We need to see consistency. But for some reason, I look at him now, and he looks different to me than he did at the beginning of the year or even 4 weeks ago. He looks like he's in complete control of the situation offensively. He looks like someone who can lead a team. And I know that that's not aiming terribly high when you're the sixth overall pick, but from whence we came recently, that is kind of aiming high. And that's a very positive development. Omar in the Bronx is next. Omar, what do you got?
Man, big fan of you, but I'm kind of surprised, man. You're writing off the Eagles, and they're just getting healthy.
They're getting healthy, but where are they playing well? What about Carson Wentz would I remotely trust right now? What?
No, he's a winner, and another thing, too.
How is he a winner? Why would I call him a winner when, frankly, he's had really one good stretch of a season, and that's been it, and that was 3 years ago. He played okay in 2018.
I'm also surprised that you're praising Daniel Jones and he hasn't really thrown a touchdown in the last two games. I mean,
he hasn't thrown a touchdown in the last two games. I'm praising the fact that there's growth. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Daniel Jones is better than Carson Wentz. I don't know that yet. What I'm saying is I'm very down on the way Carson Wentz is playing right now. And with Jones, he's playing better. So it's only fair of me when I have been as critical of Jones as I have been for the last 2 weeks to point out that he hasn't turned the football over and there have been an awful lot of opportunities for him to do that. I don't think the Eagles with that schedule have a shot in hell of winning six games. I really don't. I wish that I could be convinced otherwise, just because I still have a lot of friends down in Philadelphia, but how is that happening? It's not happening. They're not capable of winning six games. How? So Jimbo Harden wants out. You know, if I'm the Nets, you haven't even had a day to play Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant together yet. But what tells me with James Harden that you are not going to see real true success with that threesome? That threesome just seems like it's entirely too volatile. Harden's a guy that has already run a couple of stars out of town down in Houston, and now he wants out. I mean, he ran out Chris Paul, who's a winner, and thank God he got traded to Phoenix and didn't end up with the Knicks. He ran out, Dwight Howard when he was much more in the prime of his career, and now he's trying to get out of there, and he doesn't want to play with Westbrook again. Westbrook doesn't want to play with him again, and you want to bring him here to play with the Nets and Durant and Kyrie Irving. Have you seen? First of all, there's no real dialogue to it, okay? It's basically Harden saying, get me there. Honestly, what has James Harden ever done in terms of winning a championship that he gets to dictate the terms here? I know it's a superstar league. I understand all of that. But how is it not only demand a trade to the Brooklyn Nets? So now you completely neuter your team to get in return what they need to. They will get plenty in return, but what they could get in return would have been off the charts. But this is the deal that they were talking about, and this is why the Nets should never do it. Never do it. Think about this for a second. This is what the package might look like. Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie, the number 19 pick Wednesday night, the 2022 and 24 first round picks, and then swap 2023 and 2021 and 25. Are you kidding me? five picks, basically, you are swapping or giving them for James Harden. You're giving up LeVert, Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie. No. You know what Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Spencer Dinwiddie are? Great players to play with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and gives you a better chance to go win a championship. The Nets would be drunk to go and get James Harden. Drunk. That triumvirate in Brooklyn would not win a championship. They might not even make the finals. At some point, and it would be sooner rather than later, the three of them would start hating each other. Can we agree on that? That's an utter nightmare scenario for Brooklyn. It would be such a dumb move to trade all of that away to get James Harden. I get it. James Harden is a great, great player in the league. Who exactly is going to take a back seat in that threesome there to go win a championship? Who's going to just dial it back a little bit and I'll let everybody else be the stars here? And what does it even leave you with? Wow, that would be such a bad trade for the Nets. I would hate that trade. And if I were the Nets, I'd be thinking a heck of a lot more about what I need to do to put myself in the position with these guys and my draft picks and everything else to go deep into the playoffs this year. I think the Nets have already done enough. They don't have to do this. This is overkill, and this to me is adding a potential bit of poison to the situation. And if you do that, you just have no concept of how to run an NBA team. Having three stars together is great. It can't just be any three stars. There's a reason that Durant worked with Klay Thompson and worked with Steph Curry. There's a reason that worked. Kyrie Irving and James Harden are not Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They're not. What a absolute debacle that would be. And frankly, I can't even believe that giving up that much is truly being discussed. I got to hear from you on this because I think this would be, it would be like a Herschel Walker trade. It really would, wouldn't it? In so many ways, that would be a Herschel Walker trade. 800-919-3776. Let's not waste any time. Get also on Twitter as well, at Chris Carlin. On the video stream, you can comment there by all means. Do it there. The video stream's over on ESPN 98.7 FM's Twitter handle and also on ESPN New York's Facebook page. Let's go. Saeed in New Jersey is up next. Saeed, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Carmen?
Is it Saeed? How do I pronounce your name?
Just Say.
Say. All right. What's got? Yeah. What do you got, bud?
What's up? So I totally agree with you about James Harden going to the Nets with Kyrie, right? But what about this? What about just doing a straight-up trade? I don't know if Kyrie has a no-trade clause or not, but a straight-up trade of Kyrie and James Harden. I would take James Harden over Kyrie any day.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. I don't think, first of all, that the Rockets want the salary in return. That's the first thing. If they're going to trade Harden, they're not going to bring back ridiculous salaries that are tied up for a long time. That's the first thing.
Right.
Same thing if they're trading away Westbrook. They're looking for cap relief in addition to all that, and they want a boatload in return. And frankly, I can't blame them because Harden is an amazing player, And I don't want to be held captive by his whims when I just offered him $50 million a year for 2 years. He would have been the NBA's first $50 million a year player.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Listen, you put the three of them together, I think you're just asking for it. I really think you're asking for it. You want that to explode. Please tell me where I'm wrong here. Because I understand how great all three players are. Can we at least see Durant and Kyrie play together with this other group that has been developed so well here? Jared Allen, Dinwiddie, I'm not trading away those guys in that kind of a trade when they could be perfect complements. Caris LeVert has turned into a great NBA player. They could be perfect complements on a championship team. 800-919-3776. Next, let's hit, what do you got, John in Freehold? John, what's going on?
How you doing, Chris?
John, I'm frankly annoyed right now.
Why would you be annoyed, Chris?
I'm annoyed at the notion.
I love this drama. I love this chaos.
I love drama and chaos. But if I'm the Nets, that annoys me. The idea of bringing this guy in to play when he has run other players out of town.
Chris, when you talk about the NBA, it's all about fits, and I just don't see the fit. It's putting a round peg in a square hole.
I agree with that.
And the other narrative I've heard is this puts pressure on the Knicks organization to pull the trigger. You can't worry about your neighbor next door, Chris. You got to take care of your own house. And the worst thing the Knicks can do is make a reactionary move here, whether this trade goes down or not, because supposedly they feel a lot of pressure from Brooklyn. And you know what happened the last time something like this presented itself to the Knicks? It was the Carmelo Anthony trade, where the threat was Prokhorov was going to get Carmelo there, that Carmelo was going to agree to a trade to the Nets if the Knicks didn't work something out. And that's a position you don't want to find yourself in as a franchise.
So you do not want Russell Westbrook for the Knicks?
I do not want Russell Westbrook for the Knicks.
Why not?
Because I don't want to give up a guy at 32 years of age, making a boatload of money, who had elite talent in OKC and never won anything there. He's had nagging injuries the last two seasons. And the Knicks have massive holes throughout their roster. Who is he going to play with when you bring him in here? And I'm not giving up first-round draft picks to bring in Russell Westbrook. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're giving up multiple. First of all, I don't think you're giving up multiple first-round picks. Secondly, you have the cap room to take on his contract. Number three,
he's not
35 years old. He's 32. There's still a lot 32. Left for Russell Westbrook. He's still a dominant player. When was the last time you had somebody that could average 27-7-7?
Chris, that's just figures to me. Those are just stats. Don't mean anything.
Winning, I think Westbrook would put the. Here's what you need to. Here's your argument. Let me make your argument for you, okay? Your argument, John, is you need to make the Knicks as attractive a situation as you can for other players. And what does that more? The eighth pick and a French point guard this year, or Russell Westbrook? Westbrook.
Who wanted to go play with Russell Westbrook in OKC or Houston? Did he attract anybody there?
I understand Paul George went there eventually, but then he also went to go and play with.
And then he wanted out.
But he wanted out to go play with the Clippers and what's his head? Kawhi Leonard. I don't blame him for that.
He was going to a better situation because he didn't like playing with Russell Westbrook.
And then Westbrook went to Houston, and he didn't want to play with Harden. Thanks for the call.
That's what I'm saying, Chris. There's a lot of drama here. The juice isn't worth the squeeze with the Knicks.
I think with Westbrook, it is. You guys are content now to sit around and wait for 35 years for this to happen. You can't sit on your hands anymore. Yeah, the Carmelo trade was dumb. Why was the Carmelo trade done? Because of everything that they gave up in that trade. Everything that they gave up. Westbrook to the Knicks, you're not going to end up giving up a lot. Even if you ended up giving up the eighth overall pick, I'm fine with that. Westbrook is a good player. A really, really good, excuse me. Westbrook is a great player. The Knicks don't have any great players. I would like to see Westbrook come in and play with Mitchell Robinson and play with R.J. Barrett. It'd be cool. I think they'd have a chance to develop nicely. You want Russell Westbrook on the Knicks, and would you trade basically your entire roster with the exception of Irving and Durant for James Harden? James Harden is now demanding to be traded to the Nets. It's not just demanding to be traded, be traded to the Nets. I'll tell you, it is remarkable what players get away with these days, especially the ones that haven't won championships. You know, Harden's a great player, don't get me wrong, but he should not be dictating where he's going to play when he's still got, what, 3 years and $130-some million left in his contract, and they just offered to tack on another 2 years on $100 million on it? Stop. Just stop. 800-919-3776. Vincent, he is in Manhattan. He is up next on 98.7 ESPN. Vincent, what's up?
Good evening, everyone. Listen, this is my feeling on it here at this point. If nothing else happens from this, if R.J. Barrett learns that killer instinct from Russell Westbrook, gets out of that sleepy mode that he always seems to be in, it's a net positive across the board. You get some excitement in New York. You get a little bit of development to R.J. Barrett. And if you don't think that Mitchell Robinson and Russell Westbrook can run the pick and roll to perfection, I don't know if you know basketball, man. I'm going to let you
listen, I don't disagree with that. And I think you bring up an excellent point. The point, Vincent, and thanks for the call, that you could actually have a guy like Westbrook really have a major effect on R.J. Barrett. Now, not that R.J. Barrett's going to become Russell Westbrook, but he could teach him an awful lot of things, could really take him under his wing, and more than anything, the mentality, try to instill in a player. Look, I think we all know that Barrett has so much talent. We haven't really seen it come to the forefront yet, and that's going to take some time. But I want to see someone like Westbrook come here, just frankly, for that reason, not that reason alone. He's a great player. The Knicks need excitement, and they need other guys want to be here. But for me, I think the positive effect he could have on a guy like R.J. Barrett would really go a long way. Mark's in Princeton next, 98.7 ESPN. Mark, what do you got?
How you doing, Chris, tonight?
I'm great. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great. So for like a talenting and development, I don't think you have a better trade. What are you going to give your eighth overall pick? When was the last time the Knicks drafted with a pick on above eight that they drafted a better player than Westbrook? The only
They did take Porzingis, and I'm not saying Porzingis is better than Westbrook, but they did do pretty well up there. I just don't think that anybody you're going to get at the eighth pick. I'm agreeing with you. Anybody that you get with the eighth pick in this draft is not going to be a difference maker to the level of a Russell Westbrook.
The only hesitation would be is his attitude. Do you want that in the locker room? But for development, for Barrett, that is what you need.
I don't think Westbrook's attitude is nearly as bad as people make it out to be. I really don't. I think more than anything is the idea that Westbrook, you know, went to Houston and actually was demanding some accountability from some players. And when it came to Harden got all bent out of shape. And Westbrook was, you know, demanding it from himself, too. It's not like he was just sitting there pointing the fingers. He was pointing the thumb, too. You have an opportunity to get that level of talent in the building and do it for a very, very small price. You have to do it. You absolutely have to do it.
I haven't followed the Knicks since they traded Porzingis. I don't care about them anymore. They're pretty much irrelevant to me. They get Westbrook. I'm following them again.
You care about them, right?
You care about them. They're going to get saying there's never going to be a problem with getting people in that building because New York fans are crazy. But you'll care about them. People will watch them. I don't think there's a better player that would be available for a trade for them to get than Westbrook.
I don't think that they have really been in that position anyway. I think that people are still going to the games when you can. But what I would say is I would expect that you would want to get somebody in there who's going to raise a level of excitement that they haven't had in quite some time. And he's the kind of guy who's going to do that. Michael Van Houten checking in on the Facebook feed, Facebook Live feed. Why would Westbrook want to go to the Knicks? Well, he's going to get traded to the Knicks. That's the point. He would not have a ton of say into where he would end up in that instance. That's number one, not like Harden apparently is going to have. And number two, I think you have an opportunity there that if you go there and you can attract another big player there, you can do something that nobody's ever done before. You can bring the Knicks back to relevance. And you can do, I mean, frankly, if you're Westbrook and you're able to attract other players here, you could do that to the level of Patrick Ewing. And I'm not saying he would be as good of a Knick as Patrick Ewing was. I'm talking about creating a winning culture with the team as a star player. And hopefully Westbrook could get that second guy to be here with him. He could make it an attractive enough situation. He could help to develop an R.J. Barrett, or he could help to develop Mitchell Robinson. Have that kind of positive influence on them. But I look at everything else. I look at the other guys who we're talking about on the team. What are you guys waiting for? And that's what I want to talk about next. Like, what am I missing here with the whole doing it the right way thing? That's what I need you to explain to me. Open lines. Good chance to get through. 800-919-3776. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. Please explain to me why you shouldn't get Westbrook when you have absolutely nothing else that draws attention or fans to the building. Fans just show up because they're going to show up at MSG. But when that quality of Celebrity Row goes down, you know, when I'm not seeing McCartney, but I got Rappaport in the front row, well, it wouldn't be Rappaport. He kills Dolan all the time. But when I don't get to see McCartney and Chris Rock in the front row, and then all of a sudden, I turn around and Chris Elliott sitting in the front row. Things have changed. We continue on the phones because I need you to explain to me why you wouldn't want Westbrook on this team, considering what you have on this team right now. And that is nothing with the Knicks. So please, low in Queens, explain to me why you would not do this. If, in fact, you would not do this. What's up?
And I can't believe what I'm hearing. I can't believe I'm listening to a prestigious sports radio station and you're entertaining the idea of bringing on Russell Westbrook. Don't you see the market for him? Doesn't that speak for itself?
I think the fact that he's making $50 million a year speaks for itself.
Well, I don't know what the bloated contract has to do with anything. I just want to bring up 2 points as a scarred Knicks fan. 2015, and we had the option to bring in Carmelo Anthony. No other team was offering him more than, I think, $80 million at the time. And we went ahead and gave him a $120 million contract. Was Melo still a good player at the time? Absolutely. It's the same as Westbrook is right now. But the market is dictating that he is not as valuable.
All right, but let's be clear on something. Let's be clear on two things. First of all, the Knicks were the only team that could offer him that much because that's the benefit of re-signing with your former team. But secondly, Russell Westbrook is not Carmelo Anthony. He's not in the ballpark of Carmelo Anthony. Russell Westbrook is an infinitely better player than Carmelo Anthony could ever hope to be. He's not Melo. I agree. I would have never brought Melo back because at the time I felt like Melo was going to do exactly what he did. And that was get his money. And when he wasn't happy, get the most money. And when he wasn't happy, force his way out. And that's exactly what happened.
I just, the way I see it, I look at getting Westbrook as putting a Band-Aid on a shotgun wound. We'll be better, but look at OKC. Three first-round exits, 3 years in a row. All 3 years, he averaged a triple-double.
Right, but what happened, what happened this year? You know, they did go to the conference finals, and yes, he was hurt, but they did go to the Western Conference Finals in Houston.
They didn't go to the Western Conference Finals this year.
Am I getting away? Hang on a second here. Am I getting it wrong?
Yes, you are.
All right. And if I am, I apologize. But
they went to the semis.
The semis, excuse me. When he got hurt, and that made a major impact on them.
Do you really believe in your heart that Westbrook and Harden, even with a fully healthy team, was beating any, like the Clippers, the Lakers, anybody like that?
You're right, by the way. I was wrong. Semifinals, not the finals. I don't know why I had it stuck in my head that the Lakers were in the conference finals.
The point being that Westbrook does not elevate a team to the level. Not saying that the Knicks need to be automatic championship contenders.
Well, but who else do you have? I guess my point is on this, who else do you have right now?
Well, just because there's no – like the reason I brought up 2015 Carmelo Anthony is because just because nobody else wants to come doesn't mean you should just, you know, give anybody a contract. It doesn't make
– I don't think that they should just give anybody a contract. I think that they should give him – they should trade for him with 3 years left in this deal, and he could have an impact on developing Barrett. He could play very well with Mitchell Robinson. I think we can agree about that. The Knicks are instantly better. They're instantly relevant. And you're not absolutely destroyed on your salary cap because you still have a ton of room to work with. And God forbid you actually get somebody who could play with them.
If I may.
You may.
If we take him. And then, you know, if you look at everything that's happened in OKC, Victor Oladipo, you know, had a decent season with Westbrook but left him and became an all-star. You know, Paul George went running for the hills when it was time for him to, you know, make a decision. He kind of left, you know, kind of in the middle of the night, didn't even let anybody know, you know, kind of like. And then now look at James Harden. You know, it's like it's not a good pattern. This guy is not what we need. If we're really trying to establish a new culture, he's on the wrong side of 30. His production is kind of going the wrong way. He's inefficient. He puts up these big numbers, but he's not the efficient. Like, I would have taken Chris Paul because there wasn't enough time left on his contract, but that's off the table now. But a guy like Westbrook.
Chris Paul's 35 years old. He's a guy that you go get when you can't possibly – When you absolutely need the last piece and a winning player to get to the puzzle. I get what you're saying, okay?
He won't be the culture change we need. He will not be the culture change we need.
But what are you getting besides him right now? I'm not just saying hand it to anybody. This is a guy that averaged 27-8-7 this year. Okay? And yeah, he was hurt in the playoffs. There's no getting around that. Okay, but he makes you better, and it's a more attractive situation. Now, you're dead right. Listen, you're 100% right. I was wrong about the conference finals. I don't know why I had it stuck in my head that was not the semis.
Yeah, you were one round off. That's not that bad.
Yeah, but the point is this, okay? If I'm the Knicks at this point, where else am I getting that player? Who's the next disgruntled player that's going to come available, and what do I have to give up for him? I think the other thing I'd argue about it is this. You have an opportunity here to get somebody where it's not going to cost you a ton in return and capital, and thanks for the call, whereas look at what the Nets are potentially going to have to give up to go get Harden. You know, the next time somebody comes open or it comes available in a potential trade, you'd have to look at that and say, well, now I got to give everything up to get him. You don't have to do that with Russell Westbrook. He's a tremendous player. He had his best scoring year It's a guy that's averaged the triple-double before. And here's the other thing I really want to stress. 32 is not 35. He is not 35 with 3 years left on his contract. He is 32 with 3 years left on his contract. Richard in Flushing is next. 98.7 ESPN. Richard.
Dude, I don't know what my guy's talking about, but we need Russell Westbrook. 2015 Melo, I agree with you 100%. He is no Melo. He's got skills beyond Melo. We need him in New York. RJ would be his Robin, Mitchell Robinson, and I think we should get Marcus Morris back. My question to you is, and then I'm going to hang up, who could we get? Who's out there? You put your NBA knowledge beyond mine. Who can we get as a fifth guy to help the Knicks if we were to get Marcus Morris? And I'm hanging up. Thank you.
I don't know about Morris. I mean, you know, listen, he was a good player when he was here. I thought he was a good player. I thought he was a terrific ad for the Clippers at the time. And frankly, I was so disappointed with how the Clippers played down the stretch of the season because I thought they were going to lock up the Western Conference with that move. But I think the Knicks right now are in a position where they can't worry about the other players, the other role players right now. You have to let that play out. Is there a free agent right now who's legitimately going to come to the Knicks who I would want to go and get? I mean, of course I want Giannis. Of course I do. Of course I don't. I want somebody like Kawhi Leonard if he opted out. Of course. These things are not realistic. But then you get down to the Victor Oladipos and the Drew Holidays and the DeMar DeRozans. And my answer on those guys is no. No, that's not where I want to go. I don't want Blake Griffin. I think that would be a mistake. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Just frustrated with the idea that somehow more help is definitively on the way. Why is it that you can't take a chance on Westbrook at 32 and not giving up a whole lot in return? Even if it was the eighth pick, I'd do it. What am I missing that is on this roster that is so locked in to be such a centerpiece of the future?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.